السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. All praises are Allah's Lord of the worlds, and may His peace and blessings be upon our Master, the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and His pure Immaculate Ahlul Bayt. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The theme was Raj'at, which is a form of returning and one of the fundamentals of the Shia doctrine. In principle, it's an article of faith that Shias have, but when it comes to its particularities, there isn't a universal consensus on it, on what the type of Raj'at it is. We discussed the physical form of Raj'at, where the theologians believed the very righteous, including the Imams, and the very evil will return in the physical form. And then we discussed the social political Raj'at and the concept of the 12 Mahdis after the 12th Imam, as another understanding of Raj'at, which some people had. And then yesterday we started the third type of Raj'at, believed usually by the Urafa, and that's the Mithali Raj'at. But I think since we have new faces today, I'll just give a quick summary of that also, and then complete the Mithali Raj'at tonight. Tomorrow, inshallah, Hujjatul Islam wal Muslimin Sayyid Abidi will be giving a talk, and he's kindly asked me to, insisted that I give a 10-15 minute talk at the beginning, and then he will come and give his talk tomorrow. Saturday noon, inshallah, I'll do the Maqtal, and Saturday night I'll start the fourth type of Raj'at. And this fourth type of Raj'at will take two lectures, Saturday night and Sunday night, and then it's over. And the fourth type of Raj'at is, well, we'll come to that on Saturday, inshallah. Anyway, so the Mithali Raj'at. The Mithali Raj'at was when spiritual or celestial beings, be they angels, be they prophets, be they imams, because prophets and imams are celestial too, and actually they reside in realms of existences that the angels can't even occupy, and there are righteous people amongst us, me and you. It's possible that we can acquire this status. The Mithali returning is a form of semi-immaterial returning. Semi-immaterial, there's no matter, but there are material properties, color, size, shape. So it's when celestial, spiritual people or entities manifest themselves in the Mithali dimension of human beings, me and you. That's the Mithali Raj'at. In the Quran, فَتَمَثَّلَ لَهَا بَشَرًا سَوِيًّا, Archangel Gabriel, a celestial being who is immaterial. It's one form, its origin is in the realm of immateriality, pure immateriality, the realm of the intellect. But it manifests itself in the Mithali realm of people. Here, in Lady Maryam's Mithali realm. When we sleep, the images that we see that are in unity with our soul is tantamount to our Mithali realm. A And here Archangel Gabriel manifests himself in a semi-immaterial realm, which is in unity with the soul of Lady Mariam. And Lady Mariam, alayhi salam, sees Archangel Gabriel like when we see in our dreams. However, she was awake. Because when we sleep, we automatically become detached from the worldly life. Because we're asleep. And therefore, the soul ascends. But some people, including Lady Mariam, alayhi salam, whilst awake, they can detach themselves from the worldly life. And whilst awake, they have visions or apparitions. And they see, whilst awake, not with the physical eye though, with the eye that sees when we are dreaming, for example. But the point is this, that a celestial being has the capacity to manifest itself into the mythology, barzakhi realms of different individuals. And that's why Nakir and Monkar, the angel, if a million people were to die at the same time, Nakir and Monkar, celestial angels, can manifest in the mythology realms of those million people right at the same time. It's okay, there's no problem in that. They're not bound by time or space. And then the traditions would say Amirul Mu'mineen appears before whoever passes away, the same principle holds. Now whether, irrespective of whether Amirul Mu'mineen is living in the flesh in this world, he'll appear in the mythology realms of whoever passes away, or when he's in Barzakh, or in heaven, in a higher realm, he can appear in the mythology realm of anyone when they pass away. Even when they are, thank you very much. Even when, for other reasons, they can manifest themselves. Here, Archangel Gabriel came with a message from Allah. These apparitions and visions are a form of communication between God and creation. Now, the prophets and the imams, they can also manifest themselves into the mythology realms of people and give them a message and communicate with them. And that has value. Just seeing the physical prophet, the physical Amirul Mu'mineen, just seeing them, that has no value. You may still be a munafiq and you may be a good person. Doesn't matter, it's irrelevant, the physical aspect. But if you see the apparition of Amirul Mu'mineen, that will be spirit building. And nazaru ila wajh Ali ibadatun. Seeing the face of Ali is ibadah. But it doesn't mean the physical Ali, alayhi salam. Because even the hypocrites would see the face of Ali every day. And nadaru ila wajh Ali. You have to wayfare ila towards the essence of Ali, the face of Ali. See the barzakhi Ali. Ascend to such degrees that Ali, alayhi salam, manifests and becomes in unity with you. In the same way that Jibreel manifested himself to Lady Maria. So the imams and the prophets and the righteous people, I gave one or two examples last night, they can do that. Whether they're in the flesh, living in this world, but in the hereafter, it's much easier for them to manifest in the mythology realms of others. Because once they're residing in the realms, the metaphysical realms, there's no worldly impediments anymore. It was here where the burdens are, the limitations were. Now, so the Mithali Raj'at is when the prophets or imams return, but not a physical returning. They manifest themselves in the Mithali realms of Mianyu. That's also a kind of Raj'at. That can happen today also. Okay? That's why to understand the Mithali Raj'at, you would have to understand Shafa'a, intercession. They're intertwined. When you say Ya Ali, alayhi salam, he comes. He attends to you, but you don't see him. When you go to the shrines and execute intercession, that's a form of Raj'at. They're in the metaphysical realms now, the first 11 imams. And they return to this realm to see to your needs. But you don't see them. Some people do. After the coming of the 12th imam, though, that Raj'at which they speak of, and traditions speak of, but mainly, usually people regard it as a physical Raj'at, those imams will return, like those traditions that say, but not in the physical form. We discussed some of the inconsistencies of that. But they will return in the Mithali realms of people. And they will see them. That's what we mean by the Mithali Raj'at. And if they come, they can come even today. Raj'at isn't confined to the Raj'at of after the coming of the 12th Imam. You have to do some such, you have to behave in such a manner, wayfair in such a manner, that you have a Raj'at moment to moment. That's the, you know, aim. Don't confine religion, everything until after the coming of the Mahdi. That's one form of Raj'at, but you can do it today. And then people who are in need, they ask for intercession, and the imams, be it the 12th imam who is alive in the flesh amongst us, will help us directly or indirectly. They may manifest in the Mithali realm of someone else and say, help this brother, he's in need. Give yourself the privilege so that the imam comes to you and tells you who to help, what to do. It's all about a communication between Allah and creation. Now, just one marginal point that you may say, okay, since I mentioned the concept of Shafa'a, just very marginally, just one point which is a good key when discussing Shafa'a. You may say, why don't we go to Allah directly? Why do we need the imams to ask for this intercession? The point is that we aren't speaking with the real Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. When you say, why don't we go directly to Allah? I say, oh Allah, this and that. It's not the real Allah you're speaking with. It's a rational Allah that you've accepted, a conceptual Allah. It's okay. It's a low step of faith. You have to grow. At best, it's a philosophical Allah. But it's not the real Allah. If it's the real Allah that you acquire unity with, then you automatically, by necessity, become ma'soom. And that's possible. Albeit momentarily. So just imagine a life where you think, you know, Allah will suffice, but you are never in contact with the real thing. Now, there are intermediaries who are, especially the 12 imams, but it's possible for righteous people too. There are intermediaries who are in unity with the real thing. And then you ask their help. Now they're in unity with the real thing. And if they come to you in the Mithali realm, that can do wonders for you. only takes one mithali rajat, it can help. What people usually will take maybe years and years to experience, a relationship with the real Allah, it can happen in a night. So it's important, this intercession. We're not granting the imams any independence, not at all. They're just manifestations of Allah's attributes, and we're using them, since they're in unity with Allah, to help us. Now, some people ask for basic needs, that's okay. Some people ask for spiritual needs, that's up to you. Now, after the coming of the 12th Imam, now either during the time of the 12th Imam or after the 12th Imam, during the time of the 12 Mahdis, here the Imams, the 12 Imams will come, and prophets will come too and communicate, and everyone will see them. Why do they communicate? They're helping the 12 Mahdis in bringing deficient people onto the path of perfection. Their roles as the ultimate guide still persist after the 12th Imam, but it's a mithali guidance, and that will remain. If you like, Rajat is one step closer now to Qiyamat. One's becoming one step closer, because in the Qiyamat now everything is mithali. There's no physical matter anymore. This is a transitory period, if you like, at contact with mithali, immaterial realities. Then I gave one verse of the Quran and one tradition that people use in relation to the physical rajat. They can use it also in relation to the mithali rajat. Chapter 27:82, وَإِذَا وَقَعَ الْقَوْلُ عَلَيْهِمْ, when the word reaches them, أَخْرَجْنَا لَهُمْ دَبَّةً مِنَ الْأَرْضِ فَتَمَثَّلَ لَهَا بَشَرًا سَوِيًّا. Archangel Gabriel appeared before her, Laha, before her, as a well-proportioned human being. We said if there are other people there, they wouldn't have seen Gabriel. Only Mary saw her, because it was in unity with her soul. Laha, the lam, the preposition lam of unity. Here it says, we shall bring forth, akhrajna lahum, before them, the evil, those who aren't righteous. We shall bring forth before them the law of unity. If you apply it here, it's in unity with their soul, their mithali realm. Who shall you bring? Dabbatan min al-ard. And then the holy tradition from the holy prophet who said, Ya Ali, O Ali, Idha kana akhiru zaman, when it's the end of time, preceding resurrection, أَخْرَجَكَ اللَّهُ, Allah will bring you, Ali, forth, فِي أَحْسَنِ سُورَ, the best image, the best form. It doesn't have to be physical here. It can be mithali. But it's used the word surah. It's a very specific term. Yes, it's okay.
So this Ahsan Surah is the best image.
Yes.
Why does it translate to Adab?
Why does it
translate to Adab?
Dabbatan, yes. Dabba means Dabba. Creature. Okay? Min al ard. Now, ard, here, we discussed this yesterday, means esoterically. The verse, wa ashraqatil ardo. وَأَشْرَقَتِ الْأَرْضُ مِنْ نُورِ رَبِّهَا, when the earth will shine by the light of its Lord. Here Imam Khomeini, in relation to Ard, is the heart of the believer, which will manifest divinely by its the Rab, which is Allah. Here, this Dabba, this creature, which will be brought forth, lahum, before them, min al-ard. It's within them. It's in their soul. This is an esoteric understanding of it. Yes. Yes. Although the questions are later, but yes.
And the question is matching with the question of brother. Ahsan hasana. Ahsan is a comparative degree.
Yes, yes.
So a question comes in mind. Is it better, in a better shape, in a better personality?
In the best image. In the same way that Archangel Gabriel appeared before the soul of Maryam alayhi salam, it was in a mithali surah. Here Amirul Mu'mineen will appear before people in their mithali realms. This is what...
The question is, excellent surah means...
the best of images, yes. Yes. Okay. Now, the Imams had this power of manifesting in the mythology realms of people during their physical lifetime in this world. But on death, they become much freer to transcend throughout the different realms of existences because they don't have the limitations of this world anymore. They don't have the burdens. They don't experience assassination attempts or people bothering them. They're free now. So the guidance that they have is manifold. And the love for the creation still persists. They're imams. They're prophets. They love creation. It pains them when we sin. They get hurt when they see people with hellish dispositions. They get hurt when people don't accept the truth. Rajat is the final stage before Qiyamah. Here now they appear before us in the mythology realm. It's the last chance. Now we have this capacity too, that we have to acquire in this world. So even on death, we too can appear and manifest, at least to our loved ones in this world, and we can guide them. The capacity is there. What's the criterion? How can we also acquire this? Well, the answer is we have to be born twice. Whoever's born twice, they'll have this capacity. Now, this tradition been related to Prophet Isa alayhi salam, who said, "Layyalija malakut al-samawat wal-ard, malam yulad marratain." One who hasn't been born twice will never enter the dominions of the heavens and earth. You have to be born twice. Now what does that mean? Remember the tradition, Mutu qabla an tamutu, die before you die, which means die a spiritual death before you die the physical death. Death is transition from one realm to a higher realm. That's death. Or in other words, one step closer to Allah. Before that physical death, if you enter higher realms whilst living in this world, they regard that as a new birth. You've eliminated the ego, allowing you to transcend. And that's what they mean by a rebirth. Those who are born twice. We have a physical birth. But this second birth is spiritual. And it happens with that spiritual suicide. And this being born twice is something specific to humans. Animals don't have it. Okay. Now, there's one a quote I wanted to read from. In a Fusus al-Hikam, Ibn Arabi's Fusus al-Hikam, in one of the commentaries too, Ibn Arabi's Fusus al-Hikam, Qaysari, the author, says that those people who have this capacity, who have been born twice, and can transcend freely, whether they're in this realm, they transcend to other realms, helping those in hell, or they've died physically, they're in other metaphysical realms, but they can help those here by appearing in their mythology realms. These they call in Irfan the Abdal, and it's extracted from the tradition, such people. Abdal are those who create copies of themselves, badal of themselves. That copy being when they manifest in the mythology realms of people. It doesn't mean they create a physical copy of themselves. As I said last night, Amirul Mu'mineen appeared in 40 places at the same time. But it wasn't 40 physical places. It wasn't 40 physical Amirul Mu'mineen. That's impossible. If you have 40 physical people with 40 brains, 40 souls, they can't, not even two of them can be Amirul Mu'mineen. Rather, Amirul Mu'mineen appeared in the mythology realms at the same time in 40 people. These are the Abdal. Their Badal, their copy, they can manifest in different places. Qaysari writes, in the same way that when these Abdal are present in this world, it does not prevent them from entering other realms of the unseen, when they are in the unseen realms, there's nothing to prevent them to be present in this world when they are requested for help. And the philosophy for this is perfection of those who are deficient. They're coming to guide people. They're coming to put people on the path of perfection. That's their role. So Raj'at is a two-way process in this case. The journeying between the physical realm and the unseen realms. And this journeying is of the nature of فَتَمَثَّلَ لَهَا بَشَرًا سَوِيًّا. It's journeying to the mythology realms of people. They return and guide. Why should they do such a thing? For the realization of perfection for those who are deficient. That's the role of the Prophet. In relation to plants, animals, anything that is, which is in this line of perfection, the Prophet is the Prophet of everything. It comes to put everything on the line of perfection. It wants to realize, bring everything to fruition, to realization. The manifestations of the attribute of Allah ad-dahir. Everything has to be realized in perfection through the Prophet. Some prophets are imams. And then we have imams also, like the 12 imams who aren't prophets. Whoever's an imam, they also manifest, more so than prophets, the attribute of al-batin, which is also perfecting the deficient, but inwardly. Now, what does that mean? In the Battle of Siffin, Amirul Mu'mineen was active in battle. Shimr was also on the side of Ali, active in battle at that time. And there were others too. Malik Ashtar was also on the side of Ali. Malik would kill people in battle. Amirul Mu'mineen would kill people, but then with some people he wouldn't strike the sword. Malik would kill anyone in his way. Shimr also. With Shem, things became different later. But with Amir, they suddenly saw that Amir al-Mu'mineen, he would kill some people, he wouldn't touch others, which is incredible in battle. When they asked him why, they said because this individual, many generations down, there will be a follower of Walaya. And when an individual has the capacity to even bring perfection to those who haven't yet come to be, who will come to be in the future, that's the manifesting al-Batin now. The same happened in Karbala. Imam Hussein would kill some, he would not touch others. Because way down, one day in the future, there will, this individual, a follower of Walaya, will come, and we don't touch them. In another quote, here Ibn Arabi has said this. He said, perfect souls can manifest in figures other than their sensible, ordinary figures in different realms of existence, while still being present in this world. After all, their detachment from the body is strong, referring to voluntary death, that mutu qabla an tamutu. That's called voluntary death. And also the other way around, after making the transition to the hereafter, their presence elsewhere continues. This power becomes more and more penetrable as a result of the fact that their bodies cannot prevent them from elevating by eliminating all impediments, and so can be present everywhere. And so they have the power to enter all celestial realms of existences in the same way that angels can enter this world in the figure of this worldly people. And they, the perfect souls, too, can appear in the souls of those who experience visions and apparitions. The same way that angels communicate in this worldly manifestations, the angel will appear as different people to the Holy Prophet during Revelation, appeared as a well-proportioned human being, Bashar and Sawiya before Lady Maryam. The Imams also have that capacity. Perfect souls have this capacity. Why? To guide people, to bring them onto the path. Either those who are living at that time, manifesting at Zahir, or even indirectly those who will come in the future. And then in the same way that we spoke that the physical Raj'at appears in du'as, those du'as can also be referring to the Mithali Raj'at. It doesn't necessarily have to be confined to the physical Raj'at. So when you du'a in Nutba say, Ayn al-Hasanu, Ayn al-Husayn, don't forget, An-Nadharu ila wajhi Ali ibadatun. Where is Hassan? Where is Hussein? Either you want to see them, if you agree with the physical form of return, after the coming of the Mahdi, well, that may be in 100,000 years time. Or you want to see them now. You want them to appear before you in your Mithali realm. And that's of value. And seeing the 12th Imam in this fashion is important. When people say, oh, if only we can see, lay our eyes on the 12th Imam when he comes, everything will be solved. Well, if you haven't prepared the spiritual grounding, even then it won't benefit you. If you're a thief, for example, you're going to remain a thief. But you can see the Imam. He can communicate with you through your Mithali realm, like angels can communicate with you. Now, in one tradition, Someone showed me this tradition last night. He said, although I can't remember the exact wordings, but whoever recites Du'a ul-Ahd 40 consecutive mornings, they will, I think, see the 12th Imam, or if they pass away, they will come back and help the 12th Imam. Here, they usually regard this as a physical returning. But what it may mean is that if you recite Du'a Ahd as it should be recited and abide by it 100%, you can see the 12th Imam right now through the Mithali realm. Or if you pass away and therefore benefit and guide people, especially yourself, or if you pass away, you will also have a Mithali Rajat after the coming of the Mahdi guiding people. You will be involved in that process. Okay, now, the next question is, who will return? The theologians use that tradition that say that those who are purely righteous and those who are purely disbelievers, the purely evil, these two groups, but they said they will return in the physical form. Here, the Urafa aren't fond of this. In the verse of the Quran, وَحَرَامٌ عَلَىٰ قَرْيَةٍ أَحْلَكْنَاهَا أَنَّهُمْ لَا يَرْجِعُونَ, it's forbidden that those cities that Allah has destroyed and with the people in it, that they ever come back. They will not come back. And there are other verses in the Quran which says they will not come back. These evil people have been destroyed. They will not come back. They will not return. Here, a famous Sunni theologian of many centuries ago said, look, this verse shows that the Shia belief of Raj'at is incorrect. Because the Quran is saying that these people have no return. And the Shias believe that the evil will return in the physical form. Mullah Sadr replied to this theologian and he said, look, true, the evil people, they have no return. We accept this. They're captivated in the chains of hell. Why should you want to return? The theologian said, to get so that they receive their revenge. People like Ibn Muljam, Shim, the revenge has to be taken on them. Whoops, yes. It's okay. Yes. Allah, salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. It's not necessary to bring Ibn Muljam back to the physical world. He's already in hell. Bringing him into the physical world is a form of paradise, because the pain in hell is not comparable to the pain in the physical world. There's no need to stress that they will return. This is Mullah Sadr saying this. He's saying they can't return. They were so drowned in the material life in this world, full of sins. They're even more captivated and in chains in hell. They're not free at all to transcend the different realms of existences. Those who return are the perfect souls, like the Imams and others. They will return. The Quran doesn't say anything about them, saying those who were destroyed out of sin, they won't return. But the Imams will return. Mullah Sadr believed in the Mithali return. Not to say it's rationally impossible for the imams to return in the bodily form. We've gone through that. It's rationally possible. It's a question of evidence. So then Mullah Sadr says that Raj'at is applicable to those who have elevated their souls in this world, and on physical death, transcending across the differing realms of existences becomes even easier. And it doesn't apply to those who were drowned in the chains of this worldly life and who were captivated by their lowly souls. The latter were always bounded in this world and never elevated, never ascended, and they will be resurrected as animals in the hereafter. These people on physical death are by no means free to transcend the realms of existences. They will be occupied with what their hands earned of the fire, and they are suffering in hell. They cannot return. Okay, that's another point. Just wrapping up this last part of the discussion. How much time? Yes, okay. So we started off by saying there are over 500 or 600 traditions on Raj'at. That's quite a lot. And we said that the principle of Raj'at is undeniable. The general principle of it can't be denied. But when we enter the particularities, here there's no indisputable position. You can't say it's the physical, and there's no evidence for it. It's lacking. It's not mutawatir. So when it comes to the quality of Raj'at, differences arise. One of those differences is in relation to who will return. Remember the tradition that Allama Tabatawi mentioned, that the Holy Prophet said, which is a commentary to verse 214 in chapter 2, that whatever happened in previous ummas will happen in the ummah of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Allahumma sallam. And then he said in the same way that during the time of Moses, dead people were revived. During the time of Ibrahim, during the time of Isa, this too has to occur in the time of our Holy Prophet. And therefore Allah was more in favor of the physical Raj'at. But the point is this, that if you mention the physical Raj'at, like many theologians do, and you believe that the good and the evil will return in a physical form, then you have to show evidence that in those previous ummas, there were evil people who returned too. And that's not there. In the case of Prophet Musa and his companions, when they went, they weren't evil people. The people that Prophet Isa revived, the children, they weren't evil. Dhul-Qarnayn revived twice. He wasn't evil. He was a man of God. And so on and so forth. Well, with the birds, that's another story. They're birds. It didn't apply to them. And we spoke about that before. So it's not as easy as, you know, saying exactly what the quality of this Raj'at will be. Some believe it's physical. Some believe it's that socio-political form. Some believe in this Mithali time. Now you may say, okay, do we have an example of the Mithali Raj'at in previous ummas? The Urafa will say, of course we do. Plenty. Which ones? You all know the story of Musa alayhi salam, when the Pharaoh ordered the killing of all pregnant women and all newborn children so that Musa doesn't get to be born. There, I've spoken about this before once, I'm not sure where. I think it was Quds Day during the month of Ramadan when I was here. There, Ibn Arabi has spoken about this. The martyred souls of all those infants came and helped the cause of Musa when he was fighting against Pharaoh. How did they come? They would come through the Mithali realms of people, strengthening them along the cause of Musa. And there are other instances of this too. That we have. But we don't have instances of evil people being revived. And then for what? Being revived to be punished. It doesn't exist in the books of history. Although, I'm not a historian. You have to go to those who are more aware and wary. Another proponent of the Mithali Rajat, I said Imam Khomeini is one. He believed that Rajat was of the Mithali type. And I read what he had said in the very beginning where we spoke. Another was Imam's mentor, Muhammad Ali Shahabadi, believed it was of the Mithali type. Ayatollah Hassanzadeh believes that Rajat was of the Mithali type. He says it's okay. But he has his final position of what Rajat is something totally different. And we'll start that on Saturday. And finally, Sayyid Jalal Oshtiani, a very important philosopher of contemporary times, he also believed in the physical Rajat. Just give two final quotes of one of his commentaries to an important Irfani book. He says, وَإِنَّ جَمْعٍ مِنْ أَصْحَابِنَا قُدِّسَ سِرُّهُمْ. Amongst a group of our Imami scholars, may Allah, may their dispositions be sanctified. Ar-raj'atu ibaratun an ta'alluq arwah al-kummal min al-a'immati wal-awliya bi-abdanihim ad-dunyawiyya. So he says they believe, a group of our Imami scholars, that raj'at is defined as the affinity, the association of the spirits of perfect souls, such as the Imams and Allah's saints, the affinity they find with worldly bodies. That's Rajat. Some people say that. He's quoting them. Saying a group of Imami scholars believe that Rajat is when the spirits of these people have an association with worldly bodies. They come back into this world in the physical form. وَهَذَا الْقَوْلُ بَاطِلٌ. But this statement is invalid. وَإِلَّةُ بُطْلَانِهِ كَثِيرَةٌ. And the reason for its being nullified, there are many reasons. مِنْهَا, amongst those reasons, مَفْسَدَةُ التَّنَاسُخُ. It's the fallacy of reincarnation. Although we've spoken about that in detail, I won't go through it again. وَإِنْدَ أَبْنَاءِ الْحَقِيرَةِ. But according to the people of truth, the Urafa, usually those who have seen Rajat in reality. مِنَ الْإِمَامِيَةِ. The people of truth amongst the Imami school of thought. الرجعتو عبارتون ان تمثل ارواحهم المكرمه عليهم السلام بالابدان الحسيه. رجعت is tantamount to or defined as the apparitions of the spirits of those perfect imams, those perfect souls, to tangible or visible bodies, because when Lady Maryam saw Jibreel, okay, there wasn't a physical Jibreel, it was in unity with her. So, as Ayatollah Jawadi would say, if there were other people there, no one would have seen it. It was nothing physical about it, but it did have physical properties. It was visible. Okay, not with the physical eye, though. And then he says, he continues, although it's quite a long passage, he says, his ustad, Muhammad Reza Isfahani, also believed that raj'at is only understandable through tamathulat. They were adamantly against any form of physical return. Although Allama Tabatabai there did indirectly reply to this, it can be justified, that physical return. And then finally, Sayyid Jalal Ashtiani, in another work of his, he says something incredible, which we won't really go into, but just for food to digest. Walhaqo, the truth is this, anna raj'ato innama yatahaqqaqu bidhuhurihim bil abdanil mithaliyya. Raj'at is when they will manifest, the perfect souls, through or via mithali bodies, which has no matter, physical matter, but has colour shape. Fit dunya, and will manifest in this world. Lady Maryam was in this world, Jibra'il manifested to her. But then he says this, kazuhur Isa alayhi salam inda qiyam il qa'im alayhi minna salam. He says, in the same way that Isa alayhi salam will manifest after the coming of the Mahdi. Now here, this is just the marginal point. He believes this raj'at is a mithali return. But he believes that Prophet Isa has passed away. Not at that time when the Romans were hitting him, but later on. This is a different discussion altogether. He gives reasons too. And he says, yes, those traditions which speak of the coming of the Isa alayhi salam, with the coming of the Mahdi, it's a mithali raj'at. But Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh doesn't accept this. With Isa alayhi salam, there are some who believe he never died. He is alive in the physical form. Why? Al-waladu sirru abi. The son is the secret of the father. Who's the father of Isa alayhi salam? He has no father. But he resulted after that apparition of Jibra'il. I've spoken about this in detail before. But in the same way that Jibra'il persists, Isa also persists. Okay. Sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala ta'ali. So tonight is the night of Tosu'a, the eve of the 9th of Muharram. And usually they read words of Musibat in relation to Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam. Shimr ibn Dhiljawshan, he fought on Ali's side in the Battle of Siffin. He was one of the commanders. And Imam Hussein, he was alongside Imam Hussein in that battle in the year 40 after the Hijrah. But in Karbala, 20 years later, he turned out as an enemy. When he was in Karbala, Shimr wrote two letters and sent them via a messenger to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, the governor of Kufa. In the first letter, Shimr said to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, he said, this Umar ibn Sa'd is talking with Hussein alayhi salam behind the curtains. And he wants to gain authority. He wants you to give him authority of the city of Ray, and simultaneously he wants to pave a route of escape for Hussein alayhi salam, so that Hussein does not die. On receiving this, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad got furious and sent a letter to Umar ibn Sa'd stating that, on receiving this letter, you either get his allegiance to Yazid or you finish him off. Otherwise, the city of Ray that I promised to you will go to Shimr. When Umar ibn Sa'd, who was one of the commanders of Yazid's army, when he read the letter, he said to Shimr, he said, "Damn you, I wanted to finish matters in peace. Why did you have to ruin things? Now I'm forced to actively engage in battle with Hussein and kill him." That was the first letter. In the second letter that Shimr wrote to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, here Shimr informed Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad that, look, Abbas ibn Ali is of the same tribe as me, Bani Kalab. Shimr is saying this. And people from Bani Kalab, they're fighters. He's going to prove a difficult barrier to overcome. Try and convince him, Shimr is saying this to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, to flee the scene of Karbala. The rest is easy. We can terminate Hussein alayhi salam with ease. But Abbas is the barrier here. And then the order came to Shimr to provide something for Abbas. Now what was that? On the night of Ashura, when Shimr went to the tents of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family, he saw where the tents were erected. He went over there with a group of people, and then he shouted out loud, you know, with disrespect. He said, "O Abbas, I want a word with you and your brothers. Come out." Shimr is saying this. Abbas was in the presence of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And just imagine now Shimr shouting this out. He felt embarrassed. What does an animal like Shimr want with me? He felt embarrassed before his master. Imam Hussein alayhi salam said, "Go and see what he wants from you." Abbas alayhi salam left with a state of humiliation, and he came face to face with Shimr. On telling Abbas of his plans, when Shimr was telling Abbas what he's planning to do, Hazrat Abbas felt angry, cursed Shimr, and said, "By Allah, I am Hussein's slave." And he left and returned to the tents. Hussein was there in the tent. Abbas was now feeling more ashamed. Hussein alayhi salam said, "Abbas, what happened?" And Hazrat Abbas was initially embarrassed to say anything, but finally he said to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, "They wanted to provide us with asylum." Then Imam Hussein, with absolute, utmost compassion, said, "They want my blood, Abbas. Let your brothers go. You can go too, Abbas. It's my blood thereafter." It was here that Abbas couldn't control himself and started to cry. He couldn't control himself, exploded into tears and crying, lamenting, because he would never consider leaving his master. Maybe he recalled the time on the night of the martyrdom of Amirul Mu'mineen, when Amirul Mu'mineen put his hands in the hands of Hussein and said, "Abbas, never leave Hussein alone." Maybe he was recalling that, but he was crying. And then when Hussein said that you can go, he uttered the words, My mother, Abbas was saying, Ummul Baneen, my mother was Zainab's slave, and I yours. This is the level of Abbas. So, on the day of Ashura, all Abbas's brothers, Abdullah, Uthman, Ja'far, they were all martyred. Everyone had been killed. All the men of Ahlul Bayt, the companions, even his own family members who had been present in Karbala. It was his turn now. On the one hand, he would hear the cries for water and the need for help from the women and children in the tents. And he couldn't tolerate this further. Once again, he had gone to seek permission from Imam Hussein to enter the arena. Since Abbas's name and appearance was fearful for the enemy, the women were still relatively calm in Abbas's presence. After all, he was the standard bearer. Imam Hussein would say, whilst crying, according to one tradition, Ya Akhi, Anta Sahibu Liwa'i, O brother, you are my standard bearer. Your martyrdom will end all things. Abbas replied, Qad dhaqa sadri, my heart is hurting because of what these hypocrites are doing. Wasa'imtu min al-hayat, I'm satiated with life. Wa uridu an atluba thari min ha'ula'i al-munafiqin, I want to take revenge, retaliate against these people for the blood that they've spilled. Then Imam Hussein said, now you have this objective, go ahead, Abbas. But one last thing. Fatlub lahaula il atfal qalilan min al-ma. Prepare a little water for these children. Abbas went to the Kufan army, trying to speak some sense into them, counseling them, advising them, but it was of no avail. He then turned to Umar ibn Sa'd and said, Hussein is the son of the Holy Prophet's daughter. You've killed all his companions. You've killed all of the family members. Only the female family members and the children remain. فَأَسْخُوهُمْ مِنَ الْمَاءِ, desatiate them with some water. قَدْ أَخْرَقَ الدَّمَاءُ قُلُوبِهِمْ, this thirst is burning their inside. Why have you shut all access to the water? Abbas said. Then, on this speech of Abbas, some soldiers started crying. The environment was about to change, but then Shem, La'natullah alayh, reversed the atmosphere without delay by shouting out loud, Yabna Abi Turab, in reference to Amir al-Mu'mineen. لو كان وجه الأرض كله ماء, if the surface of the earth was all water, وهو تحت أيدينا, and all that water was under my control, لما سقيناكم منه قطرة, I wouldn't have even given you a drop of it, إلا أن تدخلوا في بيعة يزيد, until you pay allegiance to Yazid, we wouldn't have given you a drop of it. Abbas returned to give Hussein alayhi salam the latest. Meanwhile, the cries were increasing and Abbas couldn't stand for more. Zeal and anger drove him to mount his horse with a water container and go search for some water. He approached the Euphrates to collect some water. According to some reports, 4,000 arrowsmen surrounded him immediately and fired their arrows at him now and again. Abbas, without any fear, fought whoever challenged him. The flag of Islam was standing high. He filled the container. Before returning, he initially wanted to take some water and drink it for himself to get some energy for battle. And then according to the report, تَذَكَّرَ أَتَشَ الْحُسَيْنِ وَأَهْلَ بَيْتِهِ فَرَّمَ الْمَا. He recalled the thirst of Hussein and the thirst of the Ahlul Bayt of Hussein, and he threw away the water. He mounted his horse, ready to leave for the camp where the children and women were all awaiting and eager to see him with water. The attacks towards Abbas were increasing. He combated them, defeated whoever approached him accordingly. But during the combats, two soldiers cowardly attacked him from behind. It was unexpected. The two soldiers maneuvered.